Welcome to the pilot episode of Stan, Steve, and Spider, the show where we'll be going through all of Stan Lee and Steve Ditko's historic Spider-Man issues and having some fun on the way. I will be your host, Alfie, also known as Geek for Fun, and joining me on this monumentous task, the one and only Matt.
Yee, what is up, fellas?
How are you, man?
I can't complain. It's just another beautiful, freezing cold day in the States.
I imagine, I think it's snowing here as well, actually, so I guess we're all just feeling a bit cold today.
It's like, it's like 20 degrees out here. I was not expecting that when I woke up and walked into class. Mm-hmm. But after class, I got to cozy up and read some Spider-Man. So
exactly.
You really can't complain.
Spider-Man is why we're here. If anyone hasn't heard of Spider-Man, especially this year, I don't know what you've been doing with your life, but yes, Spider-Man is something we both have a bit of a passion for, and we've decided to take a look back at the very beginnings and see how long it gets before we could catch up at this rate, join us for reunions where we're both 30-year-old depressed men.
Yes.
So yeah, Stanley, Steve Ditko, Amazing Fantasy 15. Give a bit of a history lesson, folks. The year is August. The year is 1962. The month is August. And Amazing Fantasy, previously titled Adult Amazing Fantasy, which, I mean, I haven't read those issues, but that title alone makes me interested to see what came before this.
That sounds... That sounds a little different.
Yeah. So, like, Amazing Fantasy 15 was the last of the series, and they decided to put in a little-known character that Stan had pitched to his editor who thought it wouldn't work. Now, I guess I'll just ask you, Matt, for the sake of the listeners, how much do you know about the controversy or the history behind Spider-Man's actual creation?
Let's see. I knew that... I remember reading it somewhere as a kid, but I don't know if it's true or not, but I remember that he pitched it to Bob Kane just to, like, hear someone else talk about it, and Bob Kane said it would never work because people hate spiders, which I always thought was weird as a kid because I'm like, well, no one likes bats. but here we are. I did know that everyone told him it wasn't going to work, but I did not know that Amazing Fantasy 15 was the last issue of Amazing Fantasy, which is kind of bonkers to think about. What an issue to end a series on.
Yeah, and it's actually, because we think of it these days as, oh, if you're going to end an issue, you need a big climactic thing. But Lee's Come On, that's the only way he managed to get the book published, is because it was the last issue of his book that wasn't selling, so he could get away with whatever he wanted. No one cared. So he put Spider-Man in it as kind of his, like, creator, like, own pitch. It's like, okay, no one's going to work. If it does badly, no one's going to care. If it does great, it might save the book. And lo and behold. So I always find that interesting that from day one, from inception, Peter Parker was kind of like the underdog.
The underdog.
Yeah, exactly. It's kind
of... Wow, that's so cool to think about. Wow, Spider-Man, wow. Yeah, I didn't even think about it like that. He's been the underdog before he was even drawn.
Uh-huh. And the first drawing was by Jack Kirby. Another little history lesson for anyone, I'm sure, in the comics world knows... The three kings. We're talking Jack Kirby, we're talking Stan Lee, and we're talking Steve Ditko. And all three had a hand in Spider-Man, would you believe that? So Lee comes up with this idea of teenage superhero thinks it doesn't work because teenagers up to this point had only been psychic. Spider powers, spider theme. Goes to Kirby because Kirby's his usual guy. At this point, Fantastic Four is on about issue 5. They just introduced Doctor Doom. Incredible Hulk was just published. So they've got some successes under the belt. And they want to continue the trend. So he goes to Kirby, and Kirby does a sketch. Now, you can look up this on the line. I don't know if I'll be bothered to put it in the description, but if you just type in Jack Kirby Spider-Man, it'll pop up. And it's very Captain America-esque. It's very nothing really... He looks a lot like Daredevil, honestly, with like the cowl that's covering. It still shows half the face. So Stan Lee doesn't like Jack Kirby's pitch because he thinks it's too heroic. He's too buff.
Oh god.
Yeah.
I just googled it. It looked, you described it perfectly.
Uh-huh. It's generic superhero man. I mean, Jack Kirby's the king, but like I can tell he wasn't really into this one, at least.
He kind of looks like Blue Beetle.
Yeah, that's a good point. So passes over to Steve Ditko, who had been doing horror comics up to this point. Now, the thing I love about Steve Ditko, I want to get into the actual issue and talk about this a lot, but he really doesn't draw, like, when you look at classic comics, especially like DC comics, you'll have great artists, but everyone kind of, it's all the same kind of style. It's all the retro classic style with the strong-jawed men, quite all with regular same physique, with these like gorgeous, like absolutely like mind-blowing like 60s model women. And that's like every character. Ditko doesn't really draw like that. Even his characters who are meant to be like the jocks, like Flash Thompson, doesn't really look like a buff guy. Especially Peter Parker is probably the most, even to this day, is probably, especially like under like Mark Bagley, the most atypical superhero build possible. He's a skinny guy.
That's actually something I noticed when I was rereading it earlier today. The thing is, when I read it, is I couldn't access my Marvel account because I had like the first volume of the Lee Ditko stuff, like, you know, digitally purchased. So I had to like find a website and like find a PDF of it. So this was like, it looks like it was like a scan from like an original issue of it. So like, you could tell, like, the grit of, like, you know, that old comic paper. Mm-hmm. So it was, like, but with that type of, but you could really tell, like, it was really weird looking to me. Because, like, you know, Silver Age stuff I read was, like, Batman, where, you know, him and Robin are both ripped. And then everyone's so skinny.
Like Alex Ross drawings of Robin, and he's, like, ridiculously
ripped. Yeah. Yeah, no, exactly. And it goes straight into this, and it's kind of like you're saying, Ditko's style is so bizarre. Everyone was so skinny. Like it looks like he tried to make Uncle Ben fat, but Uncle Ben still looked kind of skinny.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's interesting.
So like, again, he has this different build, and that's kind of what Stan gravitated towards. Obviously, I think we can probably agree on this. I think most people want is Spider-Man's got to be top three superhero costumes of all time. Like that outfit is just timeless. Like, people always talk about, you'll know me is always on the Trunks crusade, but that goes back and forth between if Superman or Batman's designs need to be updated or changed. Like, Spider-Man, I think most people agree, you don't need to change anything about it from the cover.
No, not really. I'll say, I mean, and really when you really think about it, for like, generally speaking, it really doesn't get changed that much, it just gets slightly tweaked. Like, and after I tweak it, usually some artists will just go back to, like, something very, very Ditko-esque.
Yeah, you'll have, like, the McFarlanes who introduce, like, the huge eyes. The web wings go back and forth. It's argued if it's supposed to be black and red in this issue, or with, like, the highlights being blue, or if it actually is just red and blue. The eyes and the spider symbol change. But basically, he's got the components there, and obviously Lee and Ditko put that together. So, I know a couple of people before we get to actual thing, big lead off, but I also kind of want to, because I'm going to be addressing this throughout this series, is how Lee and Ditko worked as creators. Now, for those who don't know, Amazing Fantasy 15 was about a one-page, two-page synopsis by Lee, who sent that to Ditko. Ditko would then, this is called the Marvel Method, effectively, which is like made famous, is you receive a synopsis of like the basic plot, the basic beats of the issue, and then Ditko would draw it all, basically plot that make he's effectively getting being given a script. He's the director without the script because there's no maybe one line or two, but it's not dialogue yet. So he's coming up with all the different placements of the characters, what happens in each panel, and that's all completely him. And then after he gets those pages back, Lee will go in and fill the word balloons. So it's a very weird way to do comics, and it's something that they'll start to change even more as we get deeper into the series. But for now, they're at the most early stages. There's a couple of interviews with Lee where he says at this point, their relationship will later sour, but at this point, when they were first working together in these early issues, he says he wished more people would be as collaborative as Steve Ditko. But it's like he would give him a script in the middle of the night and he'd get it done in the morning. It's like these two were like in sync with each other at this point in their careers. And I was wondering, how do you feel about the Marvel method where the artist basically plots the issue and then Lee has to fill in, or Lee gives the basic idea, the artist plots the issue, and then Lee fills in the web moves?
I always think, see, my thing is, like, as a reader, I personally usually can't tell, like, if the Marvel method is done or a different method of comic creation was used to make that product.
Oh, yeah. But I feel like... just from historical, redoing my big brain nerd research, figuring out which is this, because, yeah, it's, you can't tell if you just casual words.
But I feel like if I had some sort of drawing ability, I feel like doing the DC method, I'm just going to call it the DC method where, you know, they write the entire script and you draw exactly what they say, you know, the way they want it. Or I guess if anything, it's more the Alan Moore method. So the Alan Moore method, I feel like, as an artist, it's almost easier just because at that point you're just literally following step-by-step instructions of what they want done. But I feel like the Marvel method would be more fun because I get to put my own creative license into what I want the story to be as well. It's not, instead of feeling like the writer is almost my boss, it's kind of like what you said, it's more of a collaborative process where like both of us are putting in 50-50 into this product.
Yeah, it's probably like, I know we've both read manga, and I'm sure a lot of other people listening to this will be, but it is kind of the closest Western comics ever get to, like, where a mangaka will write and draw the entire thing.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. What's funny is, when I was, like, a little kid, and, like, you know, I'd get, like, a few, like, comic books for, like, my birthday or something, I always just assumed that whoever wrote it was drawing it, too, so that's why it was always weird when I started like really getting into comics. Like, wait a minute, it's not the same guy doing both.
Yeah, like, do you know? I don't know if your parents ever do this, but whenever my mom would like talk about Stanley or something, she'd always just assume he drew it as well. It's like it seems like all people who have like a superficial knowledge of comic books, this is an insult or anything, because they obviously don't know, because they just see Stanley and all these Marvel characters. But I think most really casual people, like people who are only tied up for MCU movies now and again or watch the cartoons. Again, nothing wrong with that. Everyone's got the different thing, but like, I think most of them assume he also drew everything.
Yeah, no, I think so. I mean, see, my dad was kind of in the know-how because he was like, what my dad always told me as a kid, and I still remember it because I think it's funny. He was like, I was always into superheroes and nerdy stuff. I was just too lazy to pick up a comic book and read a comic book, so I just watched the shows and stuff. And like, you know, even back in like the 60s shows and stuff, like Stan Lee was still like plugging himself. So like he was aware that this guy was like a writer or something, but he wasn't really sure what he did. I think my biggest thing is that people misconception of Stan Lee is that I feel like everyone thinks he just created all of Marvel, like, which I mean. He created Marvel, yes, but like, you know, he didn't create Deadpool. Like people, like I know a lot of people think he created Deadpool. I know a lot of people think he created Wolverine.
People think he created Venom.
Yeah, Venom.
I always see so many people like taking Venom statues or going in Venom cosplay and like standing next to Stan Lee and Stan Lee like holding Venom stuff. And I'm just like, he knows he didn't create it, but like he's not gonna, if they paid tickets to come and have him sign something, he's not gonna say, oh, by the way.
Yeah, you're right. There's a lot of Venom people think I didn't even think about that. Yeah, there's a lot of. Oh my goodness. I've seen so many pictures with Venom people. I never even noticed just because I'm like, oh, that's Stan Lee, cool. And like I scroll. I didn't. Wow, yeah. Oh, that's really funny.
Well, I mean, I'm sure because obviously everyone knows both Steve Ditko and Stan Lee passed the previous year, which is kind of what inspired this comic, this series. So I'm sure everyone like still has their precious memories, but like we kind of like think about the fun of everything to honor these creators, because that's what we're here to do, is we're talking about their work and try and get more into them as people, because I know me and you, Matt, we like getting into kind of like how creators think, how they're kind of working, and maybe give a different take on these two guys rather than these two like mythic figures.
Yeah, no, exactly. I think, honestly, sometimes I think the creative process is just as interesting as the creation itself. Mm-hmm. It's the fact that Stanley was always able to stay relevant or throughout the entire, like, his entire comic book journey until the very end. I find it very interesting to, like, learn more about, because let's be honest, like, he even said it, I got, like, a big, like, book about all about Spider-Man when I was a kid. Like, he even says on the first page, he's like, I may have made X-Men, I may have made Fantastic Four, but Spider-Man is what made me, like, you know, who I am.
Yeah, it definitely, like, feels like both of them put their soul into Peter Parker.
Yeah. Yeah, but I'm most interested about going this thing just because, like, I feel like I know a lot about Lee, but I don't know anything about Ditko, really.
No, I don't know about Ditko. Don't forget Ditko knows a lot about Ditko.
I'll say, well, I mean, I feel like no one really knows a lot about Ditko, but, like, I feel like you know quadruple the amount of stuff about Ditko than I do.
Yeah, see, like, for anyone at home, I think I even probably know this as well, but I always like to phrase it as Steve Ditko was Alan Moore before it was cool.
Yeah, I remember you telling me one time about it, like, he just shut himself off.
And we'll get into that because at these stages, these issues kind of do tell that story of, like, him shutting himself off, because right now he isn't shutting himself off. He's right there in the bullpen with Lee and Kirby and all the other people. He's still definitely involved, and Lee praised him. Says early time, Ditko would be like the most, like, all right, I'm here, I'm doing that. I get work done super fast, and then like a really dedicated career vision, which maybe as conflict started to arise, led to him shutting himself off from all of that because he was so dedicated. And if it wasn't what he wanted, then he wasn't going to compromise himself. Or so we see. But you know who did compromise themselves?
Who?
Peter Parker!
What a great segue.
Finally! Alright, so I guess we'll just talk about the issue in general. Only focus on characters. We want to talk about the guy himself. Peter Parker in Amazing Fantasy 15. What an asshole.
Yeah, he's such an if you take this Peter Parker and put him into 2018, he would literally be labeled an incel.
This Peter Parker would shove Tom Holland in a locker.
Yeah. No, yeah, this Peter Parker, I guarantee you, has an anime Abby and just sends hate tweets to e-girls.
Oh my god. does that make Liz Allen an e-girl?
What's that?
Does that make Liz Allen an e-girl?
She's the biggest e-girl.
Oh god. Alright, so yeah, the base that people are getting is this Peter Parker in this issue, the first, like, page you see him, he's already looking in shadow, staring ominously. And we get a little bit with Uncle Ben and Aunt May, but as soon as he asks this gal out, I'm just going to, like, paraphrase him, he asks this gal out to go to the science exam. And that's the thing I felt like kind of gets misinterpreted. Andrew Garfield kind of got this right a little bit, but those movies are trash, so it doesn't really work. But Peter Parker wasn't shy. He would go and straight up ask people, do you want to come to a science exhibit? He was just fucking clueless that he expected these chicks to want to go to a science exhibit with him.
Yeah, you're right. He was never timid. He just didn't understand women. Because clearly none of these popular, like, Liz Allen clearly has no interest in a science fair about spiders.
Exactly. I mean, I like science more than the next guy, but I can't see myself wanting to go to a radioactive, open to the public, oh, we have no shielding, by the way, exhibit. But I'm good, man.
For real.
You go yourself. But yeah, so basically, Peter then he gets rejected, and it's understandable because it's like, Flash Thompson, everyone's being a jerk to him. But then he doesn't, like, whimper or cry. He's like, someday I'll show them. Someday they'll be sorry. Sorry they laughed at me. And I'm like,
that's a super villain monologue.
Is this a school shooter in the making?
Oh wow. Well, I mean, he's American.
I'm like, legitimately, I feel like the best premise for Spider-Man is, like, he was on, this issue is on, it could easily have been a C-list supervillain backstory.
Yeah, no, definitely. Like, he even has, like, a typical C-list thing where, I feel like a big trope of a lot of C-list villains just in general is always have, like, one or two, like, human ties that people that, you know, make them always care about humanity. And, like, Peter even had that with May and Ben. Like, yeah. Like, he even says somewhere in the issue, he's like, really, only two people ever treated me nice. I'm going to make sure they're okay.
Mm-hmm. He has that focus, like, but he's also immediately, when as soon as he gets his powers, he's like, give me the money.
Yeah, give me the loot.
Uh-huh. I speak about my side characters because I think we can actually get them over pretty quick. I saw this quote by a couple of people who were complaining about Uncle Ben's lack of integration into the MCU. And rereading this, I'm just like,
he's barely in there.
Is Uncle Ben really the most interesting, complex character in Spider-Man's lore when he appears in 3 panels, maybe?
Yeah, I was having the same exact thought when I was rereading it today. I was like, honestly, I've seen Uncle Ben in this like almost as much as I've seen him in Homecoming. I saw him like if Far From Home has like one scene where we see Uncle Ben like hug Peter, then like it's an equal amount of like screen time that he had in Amazing Fantasy.
Yeah, and I feel like it's because you don't need that much. It's like, it's because he kind of serves as, if Aunt May serves as, like, the Kent, she, as her, is both the Kent. Uncle Ben is Krypton. He's the thing that goes wrong, which you don't really need to know about. You just need to know it happened. The real character is Aunt May, who's left behind to look after this kid. Uncle Ben doesn't matter, because as we'll see as we go through this, this is, like, his only canon appearance in, like, 60 years.
Yeah.
Ben will pop up in flashbacks now and again, but it's normally just exact line for line from this, or misquoting with great power comes great responsibility, because this fucker doesn't say it. He just asks if you're going to fat Peter up, because he wants those goddamn wheat cakes.
Yeah. 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 I think that's the most interesting thing, because upon reading that too, which I never really thought about, but Uncle Ben doesn't even save a line that I feel like most people know him for.
Mm-hmm. And I just, like, parodied.
Yeah, I guess it has to be, because, you know, it's hard to tell, because we never really lived in a world before Spider-Man 2002. We were both little kids.
Yeah.
So, I want to know if maybe we just all thought Uncle Ben did the great power thing after Spider-Man, or was,
I
like,
know the 90s series did it.
Oh, the 90s series did it too?
Yeah, because I just specifically remember the time he shows up is at the very end of, like, Spider Carnage, and he says, with great power, there must also come great responsibility.
Makes sense. I'll say it's been a hot minute since I watched the 90s Spider-Man show.
I remember that because when I was younger, I was all for the symbiotes. So it's good to get back to this. But it's just, I think every kid was. I mean, come on, people, what kid Spider-Man fans are like that now?
The symbiotes are so cool when you're a little kid, because they give you so much imagination to make up your own symbiotes.
Mm-hmm.
And what would happen if, you know, any other character had symbiotes? But symbiotes will come later in my time period. We need to...
we're a bit far off from that. Let's just
yeah, we're off by 30 years or so.
So far, the worst villain is Christian Hogan.
I just love that how stereotypical Crusher Hogan is, every single way of like what a you know, like an old school wrestler would be.
Mm-hmm. I feel bad for the guy, because he's obviously just putting on a show, and then this fucking freak who could like lift him up with one hand holds him about. This is surely just a legal move. You're not allowed to like lift them up into the canopy and hold them down dangling.
Well, and the worst part is this guy comes in with an outfit. Like, he looks like, the way Ditko drew that thing, it looks like he had a plastic bag on his head.
Yeah, yeah, which I'm surprised we never actually see this interpretation of the homemade suit. which is like, yeah. Even like we thought Tobey Maguire was going a bit basic with like the spray painted spider logo, or Andrew Garfield where he has like the beanie and the red sunglasses with the sunglasses and like the red mask. But Tolland's kind of got like the best homemade suit out of all of them. But like Peter's just literally like, oh, I'll throw some old clothes and put like a bag over my head.
He literally looks like he came out of a Kanye West fashion show.
Oh, I need to see that. I need to see that on the new runway. Oh my god.
It's just, I don't know how to describe it, but it was just so weird because it's been so many years since I read Spider-Man or Amazing Fantasy 15. So like, it was so cool seeing like all these weird quirks that I never really noticed before, like plastic bag Spider-Man. I remember being a jerk, but I remember being such a annoying jerk.
Because this is his arc, and again. The thing that I like about this, we'll skip ahead a little bit just because there's so much in this issue to kind of pick apart. But like by the end of this, he's not necessarily a superhero yet. He's not. He just stopped a personal grudge. He doesn't say, "I will." Then he says, "The dialogue box at the end says he has learned a lesson that with great powers come great responsibility." But there's no like Batman vow to save innocence. He just says, "Oh no, I fucked up," and then walks away. And as you see, when we get into issue one next week, he doesn't keep that promise just yet. He still has to learn that he can maybe do this as a superhero thing. He's still got that TV star mentality, which, okay, so like skipping back to the beginning a little bit, I'll keep this a bit more structured. You guys, I just want to shut up, do what I want. Everyone's listening kind of gets it. If you haven't read this issue, you can find all these in Comixology. They're pretty easy to find. There's some great trade paperbacks that are coming out. The Epic Collections is what I'm reading from.
Yeah, I'll say that or literally you could get it for like digital for like Marvel probably has Amazing Fantasy 15 probably for free, honestly.
Yeah, something like that. But yeah, so like Peter, he gets bit by the spider. He starts freaking out. He starts climbing up the walls. I like this, like, just whole scene with as he's climbing up the walls and just, like, testing his powers. Because it feels like a very natural extension from one thing from the other. It's not like, oh, he suddenly decides, maybe I can climb walls now because he got bit by a spider. He almost gets hit by a car, instinctively jumps, and then he's like, oh, shit, I'm climbing. Like, that's sort of smart to me. It's like, cause, again, he hasn't got the spider motif at this moment.
Yeah, I'll say, yeah, no, I'm not really interested. Yeah, it's. I feel like they did the. I feel like every superhero has a, you know, I call it the power testing scene.
Yeah.
I can't think of a superhero who had. Superman has like countless ones for each new or hot take of the origin. We've already seen from the Shazam trailer that Shazam's gonna do it. Spider-Man's always. Spider-Man did it for sure in a Tobey Maguire movie. I don't remember about the Andrew movie. But all of those, to me, they always feel like they're trying to make it really epic.
Yes.
And he knows what he wants to do. It's kind of like what you said. This one feels so natural. Like, he's just trying to figure out that I have a body, or, like, you know, my body's changed. What is this new changes? I don't feel like he's just trying. I don't think he's trying to figure out heroics yet.
Yeah, because it's literally, he almost gets hit by a car, spider sense kicks in, and agility. Okay, he leaps out the way. He leaps so high because he doesn't know he can leap that far yet, and he lands on a building. Oh shit, I'm stuck. Climbing ability. He climbs up to the top of the building, grabs the pipe by accident, and crushes it. Oh shit, I have super strength. How do I get down from here? Oh, I can climb down this, like, very thin wire. Where you get the idea from. It's like, it's all so well, like, it's probably one of my favourite of those, like, discovery powers things, because it is just, he's not thinking, oh, like, maybe I can do this. He's like, oh, I have to do this because I'm stuck on a building now. I'm kind of freaking out. And one thing leads to another. And that's kind of the beauty about this issue, is everything does kind of lead from one thing to the other. Is the moment he gets his powers, then he's like, huh, maybe I can get some money from this. He goes to the restaurant and think, huh, I get noticed. I'd be on a TV show. TV thing, Uncle Ben, blah, 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 blah. But it's, again, it's hard to know who to give the credit to this. So I'm just going to give it to both of them, because I think they both had a hand in this. Because with the synopsis, and then Ditko had to, maybe he rearranged some things, or maybe he's the one who's doing the power then. But Lee and Ditko really knew how to make this a story. It's not events in a 15-page, I actually forget how many pages this is, but it's not a, like events happening. It's seamless narrative, and it makes it, it feels like a one-shot issue of Amazing Fantasy, not the pilot to something else. It was, but it also works standalone. I wonder how you felt about that.
Yeah, no, I'll say that's something I noticed when I was reading it. I feel like it flows so naturally. Like it flows exactly like how a pilot of like a TV show should, where it's introducing us to all the characters. It's showing us why we should even be interested in a nerd like Peter Parker. But and then it leaves you in a way where you're like, this series now can go in like 1500 different ways. Like, you know, it's kind of like you said, like this, you could totally become a supervillain. You're like, oh, well, this dude knows it. But, you know, if you follow what the thing says, it's like, oh, no, he might become a hero now. Like, there's so many ways you could take Spider-Man just from that. Plus, I noticed while reading it, I don't know, some of it probably isn't intentional. It's just, you know, weird wording to someone in 2018 or 2019. But, like, I think it's really, I thought it was really funny.
Yeah.
Like there's one trope that I noticed, that but I think the trope's funny in every single medium whenever I see it. It's when like the kid's saying something outrageous and the mom literally just does not, like, you know, just completely ignores the kid. You know, she's like, mom, there's a guy climbing. She's like, I'm never gonna let you watch a horror movie again. Like,
and I'm just thinking what happened next. Is that pal is like, no, mom, seriously, look, there's a guy climbing. It's like, shut up.
Yeah.
And I'm like, whoa, lady.
Yeah, exactly. I'll just always find that trope funny, just because I've never seen anyone ever flip the trope where the kid's like, mom, look, a dude's climbing, and then she turns around and freaks out. I don't understand why that never happens.
She's never like, oh, I believe you, that kid. You know, actually, I just kind of thought this on the spot, but like, if they ever like, because I know this has basically become like the new canon thing, but if I ever had to like adapt this, I'd pretty much keep it panel for panel, except that one change is I'd make that kid Miles Morales.
Who?
Miles Morales. I'd make the kid Miles
Morales. Oh, yeah. For some reason, I heard Bob Ross, so I was really confused.
Now that would be a TV show.
Yeah. I was thinking Miles Morales, or what I would do is I would straight up just make him a, I would make it a villain.
Oh,
of some sort. Eventually, like, yeah. I mean, this would have to be a little bit farther in the future where, like, Spider-Man's a bit older than he is in current canon, but, you know, that won't probably happen because people like to use Spider-Man like 22.
Yeah.
But if Spider-Man was ever like 25, 26, where we could believe, all right, this, you know, this 6-year-old's like, you know, it, you know, 18 or so now. I don't feel like actually doing the math. but where we could actually believe he becomes a criminal. I think you could do something cool where he's like, I've known you, Peter Parker, like all along, and deep down, this kid, like, it's kind of like you could really make him like Syndrome from Spider-Man, or I mean from Incredibles, where you can make this little kid who saw Spider-Man one day just kind of like follow through and just like kind of be obsessive the entire time.
Or like he's like his parents were like having a rocky relationship, and like he says that this kid keeps going on. No, I really did see a guy in the building. Get up here. And his mom's just like, I told you to shut up. I got that guy in the building. This is why your father's left us. And like ruins his family life. He goes through like depression.
Oh, wow.
He goes for like home. I'm doing like hardcore. Let's ruin this kid's life on one panel of Amazing Spider-Man 50.
Yeah, that's some gritty, dark stuff. I kind of dig it.
Nah, it's totally fucked up, but I kind of love it at the same time.
That's fun. that totally seems like a thing where, like, it's if they, you know, like, let's say Spencer or someone actually did that, everyone, like a third of the community wouldn't ever admit it, but they'd secretly love it, but everyone else would just be so outraged over this weird...
How could you ruin the purity of a kid?
Yeah. Child? Yeah. Well, it's even weird. I guarantee you there's got to be at least one comic writer who's thought of this idea. Marvel's probably said no, because we've thought of this idea from an obscure joke in Amazing Fantasy 15. There's got to be a few more people who've been like, hey, let's make a kid into a supervillain real fast.
There has to be. There has to be. Because there is barely anything from this issue that hasn't been thought about. But speaking of exploiting things for monetary gain, how do you feel about Spider-Man TV sensation?
I think it's really cool how he did it, seeing that, you know, they actually like made him on like, you know, the Sullivan show and stuff, and like it actually like I always like the sense of like realism to me that Marvel always brought with like, you know, actually being in like actual cities. And like, you know, celebrities usually making cameos and stuff. Yeah. I thought, not too much, I think it's smart because let's see, if that came out in the 60s, that's probably when the Sullivan Show was still like, you know, the most popular show on like TV. So like, it makes sense that like, you know, the target audience would already be interested in seeing the Ed Sullivan Show. So it makes sense that put Spider-Man on there.
Yeah, it's like a direct reference. It's kind of it's why I don't get it, because Bendis gets a lot of flack for that. But like, he's just I feel this is his direct inspiration, especially in Ultimate. There's so many pop culture references in early Lee stuff because he just likes throwing it in. I doubt Ditko put it in the script because it's not actually the Ed Sullivan Show. But like, I could see Lee because he's that kind of guy who loves making the references and like making like snide comments and just having fun with it. I can see him putting that. I see he's the guy behind the pop culture references. And I kind of
like
it. Totally fucks up the sliding timeline, but because Peter Parker's 15 here and he's like 22 now.
Yes, I totally was. I say, well, they could lie and say he's on America's Got Talent now.
Spider-Man probably would have made that much of a difference considering what gets put on that now. They'd be like, yeah, you've seen Sing to Wars, yeah. Big deal. Can you sing? The mask muffles my voice, I guess.
That would actually be hilarious. In like an alternate universe of Spider-Man, like everything happened the same, but Spider-Man on the TV show and just no one cared. They're just like, all right, cool.
I'd be totally down for that. But yeah, I kind of like it as well because we get the explanation for the costume. But it's literally just he doesn't make a disguise to protect his loved ones. He doesn't make a symbol to be feared by the criminals. He isn't trying to honor a great clan that he's come from in some kind of symbolic garb. He isn't wearing a uniform. He's like, you think that spider gimmick's flashy? Let me show you, fucko.
Pretty much. He's just like, oh. You think this is cool? Check this out. What? Something I really like that I never noticed about this issue until I read today. There's one scene where you get like a close up of like him in the suit, and you see that the suit has eye holes.
Yes, little dots.
Which I think is really cool because when I was a little kid, I low key hated like every Spider-Man costume like, you know, you'd get for like Halloween or like a store because it always had the eye holes. I'm like, well, Spider-Man does have eye holes.
Which is done beautifully in Spider-Man's, that reference to it. Like every kid has had that Spider-Man costume, and they've always
hated
it because it's so shitty, but you kind of love it.
Now I love the holes in the mask thing because now I'm like, oh, well, even the real Spider-Man had that at one point in time.
Mm-hmm.
Which, I don't know, I think it's cool now because I never... I don't know, it's hard to explain, but I feel like the eye holes in the mask are kind of some, you know, just famous in like media just because like whenever you see anyone dress up as Spider-Man in like the comics and stuff, like, you know, like fans and like, you know, at like, you know, like it's funeral and Spider-Verse and stuff. Like they always have the eye holes. So I thought that's the only time I could ever think of where Peter had it.
Yes. It's something that I think maybe that's where it all comes from. It's probably most because they don't want to, like, they're not going to put that much effort into it, and they also don't want to, like, they want to make sure the kids can see it.
It's definitely because of safety reasons and just because of, you know, they don't want to actually make, like, white eyes you can see through it. But in my head, I like to think that kids' costume designers actually just really care about their job.
Yes, they all never did this. They'll listen, yeah. They'll listen to the show, like go back in time, and they'll see it, and then they'll make it all happen. It's all going to be a quantum loop, folks. Trust me, you had it here first. but yeah, Spider-Man becomes a TV sensation for a couple of days. It's not a one-time appearance. He's like a famous celebrity. And I kind of like that because it gives a lot more reason why the public thinks he's shit compared to other superheroes, because they think he's literally just a publicity hound. It gives J. Jonah Jameson, it's something that a lot of Spider-Man media doesn't really get, is why would JJ hate this guy specifically? Why would the public hate this guy specifically? Aside from like the creepy features and the mask, and like he's kind of unsettling, a bit of a jackass. But it's just because if you saw this guy on the TV, and then you saw him trying to do what the Fantastic Four tried to do, you'd think he's a jackass. You'd think, oh, what is he doing? He's going to get himself killed. He's just fake.
Yeah. If anything, he kind of just looks like a weird sellout.
Yes, exactly. Which is what Spider-Man's supposed to be perceived as. Because he was a sellout.
Yeah, I mean, when you think about it, in a lot of medias, they kind of do make him a sellout, but... you're right. I feel like that is an important thing that's in this issue that people just don't address, is the sellout aspect, because like you said, I mean, I feel like Jameson in a way does have some valid criticism of Spider-Man usually. That's what I usually think makes Jonah J. Jameson interesting.
Yes.
Is that is sometimes he'll bring up like an issue like, hey, Spider-Man caused this, this is Spider-Man's fault. And you're like, huh, that was his fault, wasn't it? And I always think it's important that, like, I don't know how exactly I want to word it, but I feel like every single panel, I feel like this may be the only comic book I've ever read where I feel like every single panel is extremely important. Every single thing in a way sets up something that happens to Spider-Man later.
Especially the kid, because we're told of it now. 2019 is his year. He's going to
come out of the box.
You know that, like, Marvel event that's going to happen, where they're like, the untold secrets of, like, all these, like, characters. I really hope it's the fucking kid for Spider-Man.
Original Sins 2.
Imagine if it is. Like, oh, who gave the Fantastic Four their powers? I don't know what the Spider-Man premise is, but I know it is what. I'm just like, it was the fucking panel kid. But no, I don't want to sidetrack your point. I totally agree. Everything matters here. And I think that's a credit to Ditko specifically. Because whilst, obviously you give someone a synopsis, but the artwork and the paneling, he's the one who chooses the panel layouts, how many panels on a page. That's all Ditko. And he used the space he had perfectly.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think the important thing is Ditko brought the spacing and the paneling and all the, you know, physical art pieces that made Spider-Man look and feel like what it does today. But I feel like Lee almost gave the vibe with like all with this is that Stan Lee type of dialogue.
Yes, which is glorious.
That Stan Lee dialogue is to me, it's always been like a balance act, Spider-Man. And Spider-Man's always been, because to me, Spider-Man's always been like a book where like art really matters. Like there's certain comics to me, like where art like really isn't important. Like I feel like The Punisher is, well, I mean, don't get me wrong, art's important in every comic book series. But I feel like The Punisher, like, I feel like strip writing and characterization and stuff like that might be more important than, you know, art, because Punisher tends not to do anything that lavish. Mm-hmm. But Spider-Man's something where, like, the art really matters, and, like, Spider-Man's, like, you know, the big showcase where you can show all the crazy stuff, you know, you can do with the human body and, like, what fun designs you can put into a comic book universe. But then on the writing side, it's really important to show that you can be funny, but you can be smart, and you can also be actually telling just a good story.
Yeah, it's all about that vibe of you put this character in weird situations, you have outlandish adventures and stuff, you have funny moments, you have Spider-Man be kind of... I really like how Stan Lee writes Spider-Man slash Peter Parker, but although that little wording stuff actually just ties over with it, because I feel like he is putting himself into this character, with this persona, which is larger than life, and then really he's got a bit of trouble like trying to manage all of this. Is this idea going to work? Is it going to bring success? Or I feel like it's talking a lot because just as a guy, Stan Lee was 20 years into the comic industry as this was going, and he before Fantastic Four, he was really depressed. He was considering going to give it up. And just move on, because again, when him and his wife would go to like dinner parties, and they asked him, "Oh, what does your husband do?" He's, "Oh, he's a writer." He's, "Oh, what does he write?" And it was like, comic books, and like, "Oh," and then they'd give him snide looks, and like, it got to him. It really got to him. And I imagine it still did until like very the like the 2000s, because it wasn't until the movies where comic books kind of became
I think until X-Men, Spider-Man, just people still didn't really treat superheroes of all that much. I mean, kids did, but like, I don't
you,
think
if adults, you said it was your job, you'd still get like judged.
Yeah, yeah,
like you're not a real writer.
Yeah, exactly. Like I think it took for Spider-Man 2000 or 2002, whenever the movie came out, to come out for people to get like what Stan Lee did.
Yeah, because I mean, if you think about it, like the plot of this issue is a guy who is getting picked on all the time, stumbles into a great idea, it gets really famous overnight, and he makes him a lot of money, but then stuff goes wrong because he maybe gets a bit too over his head. And he has to learn that he has a responsibility towards this. If that isn't like Stan Lee saying, "Oh, by the way, this Fantastic Four thing really kicked off, but maybe it got to my head a little bit, and I started not working with my creators as much as I should have, I maybe need to rein that in and focus on telling what I was here to do in the first place, and the characters." Like, I feel like, because the timing is just, I mean, this is all my head canon or something trying to get into this guy's mind, but like, the timing is five issues into Fantastic Four, Marvel's finally set up the universe. Incredible Hulk's already gone down, but this the beats for beats for this, especially with given the writing of Peter as this guy who did get picked on, didn't really. He was confident. He always had that personality, but he never got a chance to show it because he was judged for what he enjoyed, which was Stan Lee was like writing comics, and when he actually didn't get have success with it for like being this personality, something. Maybe got to his head a bit too much, got into it for the money a bit too much, and forgot what the story was about. And with this was kind of him going back to, let me do an emotional character story and go from there. Which is like probably why in interviews later he always says, Fantastic Four, Hulk, the X-Men, all of these characters I loved, and they got me big, but Spider-Man's like, well, let me put my soul out.
That's the most insane hot take I've ever heard, and that makes so much sense. That's like literally, I feel like I just got punched in the brain just because I'm upset I never made this realization. I mean, that is beyond cool. Yeah, no, I definitely think you're right. I think there's definitely an aspect of. I feel like everyone, you know, when they write a character, we're trying to put in some sort of personal struggle they have. But I think you're right. I think Stan really tried to manifest as much as he could with his own difficulties in life and try to put it into the life of Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm. And I think Ditko did some of that as well, especially just in the appearance of Peter Parker. Like, there's this famous thing going around now, like Peter Parker, when he's drawn by Ditko, especially with the glasses, looks exactly like Steve Ditko when he was younger.
Oh yeah, no, I've seen a few pictures of Steve Ditko, and like it's straight up just Peter Parker,
which I mean, it works. It's a good look. It's distinctive. It's not typical heroic. This is like a kid. This is a guy. Doesn't look too like when Romita gets on the book, like Peter starts looking like a real like handsome guy. But right now he's just like, yeah, he's average. He's not ugly, but he's not like this stud or anything. He's even when he gets the powers, he gets toned, he gets defined, but he never gets buff.
You're right. He always looks like the average man, which, you know, well, people will say in essence, you know, time has always been the appeal of Spider-Man is that he's this you and me, he just have new powers.
But it's just closing.
Yeah.
How do you feel about the whole, but I guess like the big twist of the issue, the whole Uncle Ben was murdered by the guy I let get away. It's a classic thing I've seen in so much stuff. I'm interested in your take on it.
Oh, I think it, I think it might be one of the greatest twists ever, just because I've never had a twist where it has so much emotional payoff for a character. Because that is a point to me where Peter realizes, like, myself, that's a very much moment where I think Stan, you know, going back to the Stanley is Peter Parker thing, I think that's a moment where Stan's like, if I don't stop doing what I'm doing and don't let, and you know, if I let this keep going in my head, something similar to this will happen to me, where like I let something go and I just let something happen because I don't care, because I think I'm so cool and high up there, and then it just makes my world come crumbling down.
Mm-hmm. And it's kind of it's no matter what Clark Kent did, the Krypton would always blow up. No matter what Batman did, his parents would always get shot. Like, I know the Nolan movies and stuff try, like, they put, especially Earth One, and they try and put blame on the kid Bruce, which I think is always unnecessarily cruel. But even then, it's never his fault. It's the guy who shot him. Spider-Man, you can still argue that, because again, he let him get away, but it's the guy who shot Uncle Ben. But still, he had superpowers at that point. He could take down that guy 2 seconds flat, not even that. But
yeah,
he says, yeah, it's not my problem. I'm through looking out for anyone but number one.
No, exactly. Yeah, it's all. Yeah, to me, Spider-Man's always been about choice. And like, this is a moment where he realizes how big a negative choice can impact his life. Mm-hmm. And I think I think that's a sort of like a theme that even from this issue, I feel like even now with current Spider-Man, given I'm like 3 issues behind of Amazing Spider-Man, I have them sitting on my desk, I just haven't read them. Mm-hmm. I feel like Spider-Man's at a point, or I feel like every big story, there's always a choice he has to make. And usually, lately, you know, well, Spider-Man's a hero now, so he like always picks the right one, but like, I feel like this definitely always shows up. There's always a chance that Peter Parker is going to make the wrong choice.
And in time, it is. Especially just the reason why I like it's not a grand occurrence when he lets the robber go past. It's a couple panels. It's because the time's used appropriately. It's not this big epic thing where it foreshadows it's going to happen. It's just he lets him go by, and next page, oh shit, Uncle Ben's dead. When did that happen? And you don't know it's that guy yet. You don't know it's the guy who ran past him before. It's literally a reveal. If you read this when this came out, that kind of storytelling wasn't commonplace. Normally, if a guy, that would have just been a scene, and the next scene it would have been a random, like, Joe Chill-esque character who had never appeared before who kills the superhero's origin. It is legitimately a twist, which I really enjoy. And it's also because this establishes Peter Parker from now on. Is where almost to like, he'll think is a character flaw, is because he was so traumatized by this small choice changing his life so much, he's forever going to be focused on every choice he makes and paranoid about, oh no, did I cause this? Am I responsible for this? Because he could have seen that coming. So like he's always going to be, it kind of forces this kid to grow up. It forces this kid who, we've all been there, especially if you've been bullied, where you just like, you just want to get back at the world. You think the world owes you something and you've not been giving it, but other people have, and you want that. Everyone's felt that at some point, it's just part of being human. Spider-Man kind of embodies that, is where when he does get the power, he's given just like free reign, gets everything good and wanted. Problem is, he then does exactly what the people he deemed as horrible before and ignores someone. They all ignore Peter Parker, he ignores this guy because he's too good for him now. That's the thing that Spider-Man needs to learn, and it's the thing that he forever like preaches. You can never be too high up to help the little guy. You can never be as, like, even in stories where like Spider-Man's like saving the world, he's an Avenger, he's on the Fantastic Four, he's doing all his grand things. He's always the guy, especially in the Marvel Universe, you got freaking Tony Stark, who's never going to help a fucking civilian in his life. Spider-Man is always going to be like, yeah, I'll stop Doc Ock, but also, like, I'll help this old lady across the street.
Yeah. Yeah, no, so you're right. That is a unique part of Spider-Man, which I think I'll say I've noticed. I just never really thought about it, if that makes sense. I've always noticed, like, you know, well, like, even in the movies and stuff, like, he's like, I want to be the friendly neighborhood Spider-Man. I want to help little guys out. But, like, compared to, like, especially, like, the figureheads of like, you know, of what Spider-Man, or not Spider-Man, let's say the Marvel Universe, especially, like, in the beginning, like, Fantastic Four, Fantastic Four, you really don't see him help the little guy that much. They're usually, like, out fighting, like, you know, insane monsters and a man who toots when he pleases.
Yeah, because they're adventurers first and superheroes second.
Yeah, exactly. Even Hulk,
I think a lot of the Marvel heroes are that. They're all something else first than the superheroes. Be it Captain America's soldier first, superhero second. Tony Stark, superhero second.
Yeah.
Thor, God first, superhero second. Spider-Man's the only one who's just superhero first.
Even normal guy second.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. I think that's why Spider-Man's so much more popular than everyone else in Marvel. Just because
the impact on this, he's the most, at least money-wise, in terms of merchandise, Spider-Man's like the biggest fictional character ever in terms of merchandise sold.
I think it is a reason. It's because of that core thing of how different he is to the rest of the Marvel Universe.
I think it has a lot to do with going back to the costume. It's just the idea of the full face mask, even with the eye holes, you still can't see his actual eyes, they're just like dots. It lets anyone be Spider-Man. It lets any character, any person, man, woman, any ethnicity, doesn't matter. It's all about
responsibility and choice. It always fits.
As you can make a choice, you have the power to Spider-Man, kind of thing. Yeah, exactly. You're going to make me emotional now. It's goddamn funny.
I shot myself in the heart there. And I am too blind.
I guess, I mean, we've gone over the plot beats. Is there anything else you wanted to go over, or I guess closing thoughts before we wrap up?
I'm trying to think. I'll say I feel like we got our people. I know I really wanted to discuss the mask thing just because I never noticed that on the first thing. Just because when they digitalized it, they made it prettier, so like you don't really notice the eye holes as much.
Yes.
So I think it's interesting that I finally got solved with, like, you know, that, you know, old school grit. I feel like we dissected this thing pretty well. At this point, we just have like the bones just scattered off everywhere.
Basically, I guess just a quick thing, because this will how I'll be able to state that open or close every episode. That could be a fun thing. What do you think of the cover?
Oh, the cover is so cool. Are you kidding?
Did you know? did you know that's drawn by Jack Kirby?
Is it really?
Yep.
Let me see. That makes sense because Spider-Man really looks pretty buff there.
You can tell as well by the guy's face.
Yeah, it's a very Kirby face. Yeah, so I just pulled the cover back up.
The Steve Ditko one, I don't know if you can look it up, but in the back of the Epic collection, it's in the back of the trade, which is much more like stylized. It's from a different angle. And the story behind that is Steve Ditko made the cover. Stan didn't like it, and he got Kirby to do it. There's no like big conspiracy behind it, right? It's just he didn't like think the cover was right, and yeah. I personally like both. I do agree that the Kirby cover is probably a better like iconic image because the first one's got a bit more clutter to it.
I think I found a Ditko cover. Is there like an old man like right in the corner with a car right underneath Spider-Man?
Yes. And I think it was used in one of the in Amazing Spider-Man like 700 to like introduce Superior Spider-Man.
I like it. I mean, the Kirby one's way more iconic, don't get me wrong, but I don't know. There's something cool about it.
Yeah, it fits the rest of the issue style because, again, that's Steve Ditko Spider-Man. And
to me, this cover works better for like in terms of like the like for an origin story for Spider-Man. Like this is kind of what I picture more, because I feel like the Kirby one's like really, really like over the top epic in a way.
Yes, it is. It is very much kind of the difference between what Spider-Man actually is versus what the media presents him as. Which is just crazy to go back all this far, and like Lee was already kind of capitalizing on maybe we can make Spider-Man seem bigger than like he actually is, which obviously worked and popular, but obviously it isn't what we've kind of enjoyed from the character, at least taking away from what we've discussed here in this issue. It isn't about big grand, it is about big grand epic emotional themes, but it's not about big grand epic battles.
Yeah, to me, Spider-Man, the battles, like, they're always cool, but they're always, like, a second plot point.
Yes.
There's other mediums, usually with blonde, blue-eyed warriors that, like, you know, where fighting matters a lot more than the story they're telling. To me, Spider-Man to me is just all I care about the story, but, like, you know, it's just a good fight in Spider-Man is just like a really nice dessert.
Yes. You can tell the Spider-Man story about him throwing a single punch.
Yeah, exactly.
I won't actually say that's what happens here, because at the very end you get a little fight, but it's quick. It's done. It's one-sided. It's not meant to be. Well, we get the fight with Christopher Hogan as well, but then they're never meant to be, will Spider-Man win? It's he's either showing off or he's angry as fuck. Which I think are the two default ways Spider-Man fights.
I don't even consider these two really fights. I consider a fight at least being somewhat even.
Yeah, that's true.
This is more just a pummel.
This is a curb stomp.
Yeah. This is a curb stomp that I'm dipping.
Satisfying as well. Especially for the... And even though our hero never loses a fight and he wins, he still leaves in tears. Like we criticize good old crying Maguire and all the live action Spider-Mans for blubbering a bit. But end of the series, Peter Parker's got tears in his eyes. He's walking away, understandably. But like, again, he's from the get go. He's not a typical superhero. He's not ending how like a Superman strip. I love me some Superman, but like classic Superman stories for their benefit, because it's what the story is meant to be. It's meant to be uplifting. They always end with Superman having a wink at the camera, where like Lois Lane doesn't know his secret, or something, and he has a wink and a smile, and he makes you feel good. Spider-Man doesn't make you feel good necessarily, but it gives you a little bit of hope.
I'll say it. Kind of like what I said earlier, it kind of leaves you on a sour note, but it leaves you on a note where you want to read whatever happens next, if something happens next, which. I think next week we'll find out if something happens.
Exactly. Because at last, in this world with great power, there must also come great responsibility. And so a legend is born, and a new name is added to the roster of those who make the world of fantasy the most exciting realm of all. What a way to end. And I think we can't top that in terms of a first episode.
I really enjoyed it.
Definitely. And if you guys enjoyed that, please... be sure to comment, like, share, or just listen. It doesn't really matter. We're just here to have fun. We're not trying.
Smash that subscribe button, bro.
Yes. Don't forget to hit that bell.
Yeah, hit that bell so you never miss a vid.
Become part of the notification gag. so you can know how many dead uncles and kids in panels we can make fun of today. But seriously, we're going to try and make this a weekly thing. Hopefully all things you considered, we should be back next week whenever this has been posted with Amazing no longer Amazing Fantasy or Amazing Adult Fantasy, because that shit got cancelled. We'll be to the Amazing Spider-Man number one, which will have two stories we'll be discussing, which I'm sure will be interesting to get into, because we've got guest stars in that now, and we're getting more into the superheroics.
We're finally getting an offer. I feel like Spider-Man really starts popping off, and he starts becoming what Spider-Man is.
He starts flexing.
he starts becoming a flex machine.
definitely. And so, again, share, enjoy, listen. But as always, be merry. I've been Alfie.
I'm Meezy from the streets.
And have an amazing fantasy for yourselves, fellas.